Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former WWE referee, producer. He is, of course, a member of the legendary Armstrong family, Mr. Scott Armstrong. Welcome to two-man power trip. How you doing?
Hey, good. Thank you very much. What an intro. I appreciate that very much.
What's going on in your world? What have you been up to?
Oh, man. You know, I literally just kind of doing the indie thing, and then all of a sudden ended up with an organization out of Mobile, Alabama. It's about an hour from me where I live. And they've started a wrestling school, which they've hired me on as their head trainer. And then they have a television program on the local WKRG TV5 in Mobile. And I help with production of that. And so just staying busy doing that. They've actually... The name of the company is Diamond Championship Wrestling, and they've actually just leased a building, and they're going all in. They're going to call the building the Bullet Bob Armstrong Memorial Arena and have wrestling there every other Saturday night, every month. And so that's a real, you know, a real honor. My dad would be really happy to have something like a sports entertainment venue named for him. So whole family's excited about it.
That's awesome. And obviously your whole family's huge in that area, right? I mean, big time in that area.
Yeah. I had my second match there. You know, I wrestled for, it's funny, everybody knows me as a referee, but I had wrestled for 22 years before I ever got the chance to be a referee. So, and this is where we all started, Pensacola, Mobile area, Dothan, Alabama, the whole coast, the Gulf Coast. And so, yeah, it's an honor to be able to still be participating. I started when I was 22 and now I'm 62. And so
wow.
And to still be participating in the business that I love, man, it's an honor.
What is it like to be a part of the Armstrong family? Like we're talking about Bullet Bob, who's obviously a legend of legends. What is it like to be a member of the family?
Man, I'll tell you, growing up, it was just the brothers. You know what I mean? We were like any family and we just happened to wrestle. And, you know, we didn't even realize growing up how famous our dad was. We had no idea. We just, because literally back in the day, 40 years ago, there wasn't a whole bunch of television. And so, you know, he was on a TV show that was on 1 hour every week. And now you turn on and you get, you know, 2 or 3 hours of wrestling, I think almost every night of the week. And it just wasn't that way. So if you were on a television show as a wrestler, you were a true star. And but we didn't get that as kids, you know, growing up. We didn't understand that. We just we get in a fight in the middle of the living room. He'd move the coffee table out and let us go at it until somebody actually got hurt. And then, OK, boys, come on. So, yeah, no, it was a blessing, man. And our mother, God rest her soul, man, she was a saint and literally raised 4 sons as wrestlers and raised my dad too, basically. So, yeah, I miss both of them very much so.
Was there any like chance that you weren't going to be a wrestler? Like, was there anything else in the career path, or was your dad like, nope, you got to be a wrestler?
No, I graduated high school, went on to college. And then, during college, I got a job actually at a bank working in the bookkeeping department. So I was actually helping people figure out their checking accounts. And, so when Brad started wrestling first, and he was a year younger than me. And when he started, I'd always wanted to do it. And Brad had never said he wanted to do it. And so when he started wrestling, it was like, oh man, I want to do that. And boy, my dad was very much, no, 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 use your brain. Don't use your body. And come on, man, it's a bug. I mean, wrestling is a, you know, it's like a drug and you get addicted to it. And I couldn't, for like a year and a half, I just watched Brad on TV and every match, I just wanted to be a part of it. And so, you know, to be able to finally get to do it, and my dad did not want me to, but when he finally gave me the okay, man, I was off and running. And it's what I've done ever since.
Man, everybody always says Brad, like you're saying, like they watched him, how good of a worker. My buddy Lash LaRue, who obviously was a traveling partner of Brad, loves Brad. Dr. Tom says he's the best, greatest worker. Tim Horner always talks about how Brad's the best. What is it you think about him that made him, like, did he just kind of learn so much from your dad and had that same athletic ability?
So, number one, the athletic ability was there, without a doubt. And, but here's the kicker. Back in the territory days, you wrestled 6 nights a week and with 1 day off, and you wrestled, you know, Birmingham, Alabama was every Monday night. So you're in and Mobile every Tuesday night. So you were in front of the same crowd almost every week. And, Brad, when he broke in with, like Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, Norvell Austin. Those were the guys. And Brad was tag teaming with my dad. So, you got a rookie. Brad was 18 when he started, and you got a rookie, 18 years old, in the ring. You got Bob Armstrong standing in one corner, you know, guiding him. And in the other corner, somebody like Dennis Condrey. Come on, man. Dennis Condrey, Bobby Eaton, probably one of the best tag teams in the history of the business. And nobody talks about that, but they truly were. Dennis Condrey, to be able to get in the ring with him at 18 years old and have your dad in the other corner, man, guys like that, Norvell Austin, one of the best black wrestlers in the history of the business, bar none. And another guy that doesn't get talked about enough, but it was back in the day. And so they took their time with him and they taught him, and it was on the job training. I mean, he was learning as he went. And once you get a couple of years with those guys under your belt, man, Brad just picked it up. He just did. And then when I came along, I'll never forget, this was the very first wrestling match I ever had, was Brad and I against Randy Rose and Dennis Condrey. And wow. And so, yeah, and Brad, right before the match, I go to my dad, I'm nervous wreck. And I said, hey, what's the, you know, what, can you give me anything last minute that I can do here? And he goes, yeah, stand in the corner and watch your brother. And that's exactly what I did. That's exactly what I did. I learned a lot from him, man. He was really, really smooth.
What attribute did you take from your dad? Because they said Brad became the worker. Brian, the road dog, became the talker. Like, Bullet Bob is such a good talker. Like, he basically didn't give every kid all of his abilities, but they always said he kind of spread it out. He spread out the wealth. What do you think? Brawler? Do you think technical wrestling? Like, what ability do you think he passed on to you?
Honestly, the business side. I really feel that the business side is what he had passed to me. He knew that, I mean, I'd gone to college and I'd, you know, worked in a bank. So I used my brain and he taught me that. And he said, hey, you got to look at the totality of a show. You know, when I started wrestling, I just wanted to wrestle. I didn't care about anything else. But he was the one that said, hey, focus on what the referee does. Focus on what the announcer says. Focus on what he laid out all the particulars for me to watch instead of just thinking about wrestling. And, you know, when I look back on it, I'll tell you a quick story. I was first 6 months of me being a wrestler, and I'm in the back seat. My dad's driving, Brad's in the front seat with him, and we're going to a show. And I'm in the back seat, 22 years old, been in the business 6 months. I know everything. You can't tell me nothing. I know it all about everything as far as wrestling goes. And I'm back there spouting my mouth. And I'm telling my dad and Brad how I'm going to be the world champion one day. And at this time, John, I was probably about, I don't know, 180 pounds and 6 foot tall. And my dad, finally, he had had enough because I'd been running my mouth. He goes, son, I'm going to be honest with you. If you'll just shut your mouth and take in all your surroundings, do like I've always told you, learn every position from the announcer to the guy putting up the ring to the popcorn salesman, learn everything about the business you can, you'll have a really good career and have a lot of fun. He said, but if you just keep focusing on this one thing, he said, there's only been a handful of world champions in the history of wrestling. And he said, quit trying to focus on that and just learn the business. And so, hey, look, 40 years went by. And during those 40 years, I helped put the ring up. My wife, when we first got married, we would set up the towns and literally put the posters up in the town and sell the tickets. And then after selling the tickets, I would go announce the show and she would be selling the popcorn after selling the ticket. I mean, after that, I wrestled. After that, I ended up being a referee, and then a referee for the largest company in the world, and then end up out of that becoming a producer of the show. And man, everything my dad had said in that car ride on that day, I'll never forget it as long as I live, because everything he said came to pass in my life. And I'm still being able to do it, you know, train young guys and young minds and opening their eyes to the fun business of pro wrestling.
It's crazy because if you think about it, it's like, oh, come on, I want to be a wrestler. I want to do that. But he's so smart. He's so wise. He's like, no, you got to learn the whole business. And now, yeah. Like, gives you so much more longevity.
Yeah. Yes. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah. I was done at 40. You know, the male body at 40 years old, when you've pounded it for, I'll never forget. I had an injury when I was about 26 or 7, and it was a back injury. It put me out for like 10 months. And I'll never forget we had a family doctor that all of us went to. And he said, son, you know that the human body is not supposed to do what your entire family does for a living. He said, you can't keep doing this and expect your body to hold up. And, you know, when you're, like I said, when you're young, you're bulletproof, invincible. Hey, doc, you don't know Jack, you know, but he was so right. Cause now I wake up in the morning, man, I have to do a lot of stretching before I actually attack the floor.
When you first started in the business, like you said, like, you know, you're young, you're bulletproof. I'm not going to get hurt. This and that. Pensacola area, right? You were in Continental for a while. What makes that territory so special, because every wrestler says, man, I wish I could have wrestled there longer. What is it about that territory?
So it's the beach. I mean, it was short trips. It was the beach. The longest trip we had would be on a Monday, and we would leave. We would leave the beach about 2 p.m. and drive to Birmingham, do the show and turn around and drive back. But Tuesday was Mobile. It was an hour away. So you didn't have to leave your house till 6:30, get to the show at 7:30, and you know the show started at 8, and so it was just all the trips were short, and it was the beach and the weather here. You know, here where I'm at, you may get 3 months of cool weather, but it's it's 9 months of beautiful weather. And March, April, May, business would be good. Business would be good all summer simply because the TV was so hot. And we had a great crew, you know, and we, the crew was literally based with the Fuller family, Ron and Robert Fuller, and their family, you know, is legendary in the wrestling business. And Jimmy Golden, who was their cousin, and Roy Lee Welch, who was another relative. And so you had those four guys, and then my dad, me, and my two brothers, because Road Dog Brian, he hadn't started wrestling at that time. But so you literally had the Fullers and the Armstrongs, and that was like the base of the card. And so and then you surround it with guys like Dr. Tom and Hustler Rip Rogers, Adrian Street. You know, you bring in Tom could go, man. My God, he's like the. So I was asked not long ago, hey, if you could wrestle, you know, and you could still go, if there was one guy you could have one more match with, who would it be? And I said, it's Dr. Tom Pritchard. I just, man, had great chemistry with that dude, man. And he was a great friend. I mean, me and my wife, when we first got married, Tom helped us move. I mean, he, just a great dude and a great family friend. But in my rookie years, Arn Anderson and I were roommates for about a year and a half down here. And that, I can tell you right now, wake up in the morning, go to the gym, go from get the pump, and then go to the beach, hang out on the beach till 2 or 3 o'clock, come back to the apartment, take a shower, go to the town. We thought we were rock stars, man. It was a blast. It was a lot of fun, but it's just the short trips, the weather, and good houses and a good crew. And man, why wouldn't you want to stay? You know what I mean?
And like Dr. Tom says, the prettiest girls as well, he always says. He throws that up.
Well, he ain't lying about that.
you can't beat that. The beach, the pretty girls, and not having to drive far for work. I mean, it's pretty right. Awesome.
Yeah, no, and get to do what you love. You know what I mean? I mean, that's with anything in life. If you truly love something, you never work a day in your life, and that's kind of how it was with us. We really loved it.
The Armstrongs and the Fullers, man, it's just like the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. It just goes together, right?
Yeah, very much.
Weird the way chemistry works sometimes.
And the funny thing is that was going on at the same time. In Texas, you had that rivalry going, and then in the Gulf Coast, you had this rivalry going. And, you know, people would always say, oh, you guys ought to go work with the Von Erichs, and y'all would have a great run. You guys could be heels there. Then they could come here and be heels. But the TVs didn't reach then, you know what I mean? It wasn't like now. And so, and now times would have been different, man. That would have been such an honor to be able to work with any of those guys.
Do you wish that it would have like lasted longer, just as far as that territory was concerned? Like, so you don't have to go to WCW or you don't have to go to Smoky Mountain. Do you wish that territory could have lasted?
Oh Lord. Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. It was just so laid back. I mean, literally it was, you know, you're in flip flops all the time. I mean, three months out of the year, you have to put on tennis shoes, but you're in flip flops and shorts and tank tops. And man, it's just, and business was so good. You know what I mean? And but hey, look, everything in the wrestling business changed. Back in those days, everything in the wrestling business changed about every 5 years. Every 5 years, the business just went through changes. And if you weren't keeping up with it, you were left out. And so it was Southeastern Wrestling when it all started. And then after about 5 years, they changed the name to Continental Wrestling. Continental had a really good run. And then they ended up selling it. But once the houses start dipping, and look, my father was here for, you know, a little over a decade as far as wrestling goes. And so, and my brothers and I think 89 may have been when that all sold, and I started in 83. So to get 6 years under my belt before I did have to go out into the world and try to wrestle somewhere else, it was a blessing for me because I did get to work with guys like Tom and you know, Condry and just guys like that could really teach me. And they did. I mean, Hustler Rip Rogers, that dude, he had a good body. And he knew how to be a performer. I just knew how to wrestle, mat wrestle, or that's what I was trying to learn to do. And he was a performer, and he taught me a lot too, man, a lot. And so, look, yeah, I wish it was still going today.
I think was it David Woods or whatever? He comes, he buys it from Ron. That was kind of the beginning of the end.
Yes. Yes. You know, I mean, you've got to really know the business to run the business. And you can have a lot of money and walk in and, you know, to a show and see a sold out show and go, oh, I can own this. I'll take it. But if you don't know what you're actually buying, you're just buying a ring truck, a wrestling ring, and thanks for coming. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of what happened. He had TV stations. He just didn't know the wrestling business. And had he known that, it may still be going today, but he just didn't. And that's not his fault. He saw a really good product and he went for it. It just didn't work.
True. Yeah. That's just the way it goes sometimes, the wrestling business.
Yes.
And Vince is like, he's taking over. Crockett sold to Turner. You know what I mean? Everything was changing in the business.
Yes. Yeah. And look, cable television, man, once I can remember my father and Brad going and working Georgia Championship Wrestling, and Ted Turner owned it. And then all of a sudden, boom, while they were there, Ted Turner signs the big deal for cable television, the TBS, the Superstation. And that had never been done. And so they were all that crew was right place at the right time. And overnight they were going on tours to in all over the United States, and they were all selling out because people were watching it on the Superstation. And all they had was the wrestling in their local area. And now here's a whole nother wrestling organization that's just blowing up. And man, it made Brad, at 21 years old, Brad was a superstar. And so, and my father too, my father already had a name in the business, but it really put both of them on the map. Yeah, everybody that was there, it did. And so everybody ended up, you know, making a living off of that one good run. And what I mean by that is future earnings. They had that one good run as soon as that opened, and then they were able to cement their future in the wrestling business because of that run. And so, man, hey, right place, right time. That's the business anyway.
Yeah.
Right place, to right yep. time.
Does Brad or Steve, because obviously Brad is in WCW for a while, but Steve was in WCW too, the Wild-Eyed Southern Boys, the Young Pistols, if you will, great team there with Tracy Smothers. Do they get you into WCW, or how does that work?
So for me, I had literally been in the business until I had exhausted all of my options. And at that stage, I had two small kids that, and when I say small, I mean like 5 and 3, and no job. Smoky Mountain was done. Everything was done. And I called WCW, and just Nick Patrick, one of the greatest referees ever in the business. His father, Jody Hamilton, one of the original assassins, was in the office. And so I called him and just said, hey, Jody, is there anything there? And he said, the only thing we would have would be an enhancement talent and, you know, a job guy, basically. And he said, they're going to, you know, if you did it, they'd bring you up here, eat you up in 4 or 5 minutes, and you'd be done. And he said, you don't want to do that. And I just told him, I said, Joe, I got to be honest with you. I've got two small children and they don't care if I win or lose. They just want to eat. And he said, well, I mean, I want you to think about this, but I'll definitely use you. And so that after that phone call, I was with WCW for 7 years. And so all the way up until Vince bought it out. And once Vince bought it out, they took three. I had started refereeing about, I don't know, 7 or 8 months prior to the end of it all. And Vince said he only wanted three referees, and they sent word, he's not going to take you. You're too well known as a wrestler, and he doesn't want his referees taken away from his matches. And so, look, that's business. I understood it then. I understand it now. And so I didn't get the opportunity. And then a couple of times through the years of, you know, about 5 years, I just worked the indies and had a real job. I was managing a furniture store and wrestling on the weekends. And then all of a sudden one day, Umaga, Eki, he walks in the door of the furniture store because he lived in Pensacola at the time, and he walked through the door and said, "Hey, man, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Dude, wrestling's come and gone for me, and you know, I'm a normal human being now. I'm home every night with my kids doing homework and blah, blah, blah." And he said, "Oh, no, man, there's no Armstrong supposed to be anywhere but the wrestling business." And I said, "No, dude, really, I'm good. I'm good." He goes, "No." And I knew at that time he was a star in WWE. And about when he left, he said, "Let me get your number." And I gave him my number. And about a month later, he walks into that furniture store and said, "Hey, here's John Laurinaitis' card." He said, "Give him a call." And I said, "Oh, Ecky, I can't, man. I'm a dad now. I'm home every, you know, I'd spent my career on the road. So, I mean, all my children's youth I had spent on the road. And now I'm at home with them every night eating dinner." And I said, "I just can't, you know, I'm good, man. He goes, "Hey, it's worth a phone call, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And so I made the phone call, and the rest is history. I had a 15-year run with the, you know, with WWE, and literally they didn't hire me until I was 45 years old. So I had a really good, really fortunate, really good run. And honestly, without Umaga, I would have never had that opportunity ever, because I hadn't called anybody, hadn't tried to get a job. And I try to tell as soon as I meet a new family member from the Fatu family, I always try to tell them the story about how he changed literally the course of my life and the course of my my family's life. I mean, my wife and kids, and just being given that opportunity, me being given that opportunity because of him, man, I was able to provide so much better for my wife and children. And man, he'll always have a place in my heart. God rest his soul. He was a good man.
Wow, that's amazing. And those Samoans, those Fatus, they love Pensacola. I know.
Oh, yeah.
They were in that area too, wrestling for Kirk Continental.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Somebody asked me not long ago too, what is the, you know, like of all the wrestling families, and you know, you can name 10 or 15 wrestling families right now. And they said, do you have a favorite? I said, without a doubt, the Samoan dynasty, man. That they are the greatest in-ring performers of any of the, look, a lot of families have a lot of great performers. Those guys are consistently great performers, and the most box office cash ever from any family, bar none, in my opinion. I think they've drawn more money than any family in history. And they will and they're doing it right now, and will continue to do it, because there's more of them waiting in the wings.
Man, Roman's on top. Rock is back. You know, there's the Usos. Yeah, there's Mike at Solo. Yeah, they just keep coming.
Yeah, one of the Usos still lives here. Both the Usos and the Twins and Roman all went to Escambia High School here in Pensacola, Florida. And so, yeah, and Michael Hayes is from here. I mean, there's a lot of wrestling people from just from, performers just from this area. It's heaven, man. It is.
Gotta love it. But and Umaga just randomly shows up at the
store. Yeah,
pretty crazy.
He was buying a recliner. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm buying a recliner for my mom. Show me one." And so we walked around looking at recliners and talked about wrestling. He walked out, didn't buy a recliner, but got me a job that changed my life. Yeah, just man, crazy, right? Just crazy.
And obviously gone way too soon for him. He was unbelievable. He was one of the best of the bunch.
Yes, without a doubt. There's one Jacob Fatu out there right now, man. And he's not in WWE yet, but I think that's in his future. He's unbelievable. He reminds me, to watch him work reminds me so much of Umaga. It's unreal.
I was just sharing a beer with him a few weeks ago at MLW. He was there. He was shocked, because I said, tell Tonga Kid, your dad, tell him I said hello. He's like, "How do you know Tonga Kid?" I said, "Come on, I'm 41 years old. Of course I know who Tonga Kid is. Come on."
Yeah, Tonga Kid was other than my brother, Tonga Kid was my first tag team partner. He and Johnny Rich, Tommy Rich's cousin.
Oh, yeah.
And we did the Rich Armstrong Tonga Rat Patrol. And we had a good run here, man. That Tonga Kid was 17 years old at the time. And, you know, with having a small television program, people didn't know he lived in Pensacola. They didn't know he rode to the towns. You know what I mean? They didn't know anything about him. He would have to get checked out of high school to go to sell out houses and work in the main event. And, you know, they get the heat on me. I'd dive and give him the hot tag, and he would come in and just do all the flying that those guys can do and just steal the show. I mean, just an amazing talent. So to see his son doing it now is just, man, it's so rewarding for me because I was there doing it with his dad. Really cool.
What a connection with you and the Samoans. I love that. Two legendary families connecting.
Yeah, well, it's funny because when Brad first started, and I was telling you about the Georgia run that they had in his youth, he and my dad worked against Afa and Sika, and they had a little, like a storyline with them for a while. And so, again, Brad at a very young age in the ring with just guys that can literally teach him, and they did, and the Samoans did, and then fast forward to the Samoans having kids, my dad having a bunch of kids in the business. And like my brother Steve, he got a chance to go up there and work when it was WWF. And there he is from Pensacola, and he doesn't know what he's doing up there in New York. He's getting off airplanes. And Rodney Yoko literally says, "Steve, come on, ride with us." And another, you know, there's another Samoan taking care of another Armstrong. And then all the way down to Eki, you know, to me tag teaming with Tonga, all the way to, you know, where Eki walking in, getting me a job. And it's our family's blessed to have guys like that as friends. You know what I mean? Good dudes.
When you do get the job there, Johnny Ace, any sort of relationship with Ace or not really?
Oh, yeah. My first tour of Japan was in 1991, and Johnny was on the tour, and that's when I met him. And so he kind of showed me the ropes about being in Japan and the different style, because it was a much different style than I was used to. But he helped me a lot. And then fast forward, I'm WCW, and Johnny gets an office gig there. And so you know, had a little bit of a relationship. Didn't see him a whole lot because he wasn't on the road except for TVs. So I would see him at a couple of TVs here and there. But then when I, you know, at 45, we have the phone call to talk about going to WWE. Well, then it became I worked for him. I mean, you know, Vince was the guy that ran the operation, but Johnny kind of helped run everything else. And Johnny was like his right-hand man. And so dealt with Johnny every day, as a referee. But then once I became a producer, he was my department head. I mean, he was my boss. So it was, you know, dealing with him, talking to him, emailing every day. And, but yeah, I mean, long relationship with Laurinaitis from 91. Long one.
So were you a producer and referee at the same time, or were you one before the other, or did it ever intersect?
I was referee first, and then once I'd gone to Hunter probably 2 years before they actually made me a producer. I'd gone to him and told him, I said, "Hey, look, I mean, number one, they usually don't hire people at 45 years old to be in front of the camera, but I had gotten the job as a referee, so I was in front of the camera." And so a few years in, I went to Hunter and just said, "Hey, look, I'm interested in doing something after this, and I would love to, you know, learn anything that I can be taught from anybody about being a producer or just working behind the scenes." And he's, you know, "Okay, yeah, good. I'm glad you're thinking about your future. Good." That was about it. And so I want to say almost 2 years went by, and all of a sudden he took me aside and said, "Hey, do you own a suit?" And I started laughing. I said, "Yeah, one to be buried in." And he said, "You might want to go buy a few more suits. We want to bring you from in front of the camera and bring you in as a producer." And I went, "Oh, dude, yes, thank you so much." And he said, "In the meantime, we're going to do a storyline and write you out as a referee." And I said, "Oh, well, come on, man. You know, referees don't get stories written about them." I said, "Okay, yeah, that'd be great." And so we ended up doing the whole, the storyline where I fast counted Daniel Bryan and you know, get caught by Hunter and called out on it and all that, and he ends up firing me on TV. And it was so fun and such a cool way to transition for me to go behind the scenes. And so then I was producer for probably, gosh, 6-7 years. I had a good little run all the way to COVID. COVID took me out of the picture. But hey, look, a lot of people lost their lives. I just lost a gig. That's all. But it was the highlight of my career to be able to work with WWE. It was a lot of fun. I met some awesome people. And dude, I literally saw the world. I, through WWE, able to walk in castles in Scotland, Ireland, England, able to ride a camel at the foot of the Egyptian pyramids. I mean, things that you would only dream of doing in your lifetime. And because of WWE, I was able to live all that. And man, I will forever be grateful. It was a lot of fun.
I feel like you're one of the few referees, as far as WWE is concerned, that they did give storylines to, right? Because you had the Undertaker Punk thing. You always had like a storyline going on. They liked you a lot.
Yeah, I was just lucky, I guess. They did. Well, you know, hey, look, when you work with guys that are great, you either step up or step out. And so, plus, guys won't ask questions. A lot of guys in the business don't ask questions because they don't want to think, that sounds stupid if I ask. There are no stupid questions. The stupid part is a guy's going to run and hit the ropes and then come off and get nailed. You know what I mean? Come on, man. That's the stupid part. So I would ask a lot of questions. Do you want me here? How fast do you want me there? And I know guys would go, man, this dude won't shut up. But I wanted to make sure I made it as great as I could for the scenario that we were being put in. So I just, and again, working with great talent, you know, like you said, Undertaker, Punk, man, just to be in the ring with those guys was a blessing, but to have them trust you in a storyline or trust you with something big in their match, man, you got to step up.
Yeah. And you were part of WrestleMania main events. So, I mean, big time matches you're a part of.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. I was really blessed. Really blessed.
When they give you the WrestleMania main event, like, what do you think in your head? I mean, that's pressure, or are you thinking, oh, this is awesome? Like, you
so,
know, this is
great. Without a doubt. Yeah. Pressure without a doubt. I mean, you don't want to let anybody down, and you want to do everything best of your ability. I've mentioned this before. I'll never forget, right before I walked out, Shawn Michaels said, hey, do me a favor. When you get in the ring, they'll be showing the packages of everything that led up to this match. That's what the people are going to be watching on the screens. He said, but you'll be in the ring. He said, I just want you to take a big, deep breath and then turn slowly in a circle and just take it all in. And man, I got in the ring. I did exactly what he said. And I've never been more thankful for advice in my life to be able to just live in that moment and take that good deep breath and just look around and immediately go, how did my dumb ass end up here? Because dude, you're in the middle of, you know, 80,000 people and they're all just wanting to see just the biggest match on the show, and you're a part of it. And it's just, man, just great words from Shawn Michaels. I'll forever be in his debt for that.
Wow, great heads up by him. That is great advice. Yeah, take it all in. Enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I did.
When you are like the ref, right, the referee, everyone always kind of just, you know, they're just the third man in the ring. And I've interviewed a few refs before, but what is, in your mind, like the actual importance of the referee? Because some of the guys say, like, oh, you know, we're the third guy in there. It's so important. But, you know, some of the other guys, like James Beard or Earl or somebody, it's like, just don't get in the way. You know what I mean? Don't take away. And not necessarily add, but just don't take away.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You don't look, a great referee will never make it about themselves. And in today's wrestling, you see sometimes on some channels, you see the refs making it a little bit too much of a show. And I always say it's not their fault. It's their boss's fault. If their boss or whoever's above them lets them get away with that, hey, why not? But I always thought if I was one of the boys, which I was for 22 years before I ever started refereeing, and I took a big, huge bump, and it hurt, which it would, and I rolled to my side to look up to see the ref making all these different gestures, I can promise you that ref and I would have words after the match in the back, and I would let them know, here I am seriously, you know, hurting really bad, and you're making a joke of it all. That won't happen again. And if it ever happened again, we would have a very serious conversation. I just don't believe in it. I believe the ref is the third man in the ring when it comes to needing to know different things, or I don't know, just small things. But I think it's very disrespectful to the talent for the ref to make it about themselves at all. I really do. I think it's just it's an honor to be in there and be a part of it. So why disrespect that? But yeah, staying out of the way is the main thing. Look, Nick Patrick, my very first match as a referee, I said, Nicky, you got anything for me? And he said, yes, be invisible until it's time to be seen. And what he meant by that was you stay out of the way and don't let them do their business. And then if they get locked up in the corner, well, it's time for the ref to be seen. You come in and say, okay, let's break it up. If they go down into a pin, motion stops. Well, it's time for the ref to count. It's time to be seen. And so I took that with me all the way through my years as a referee, be invisible until it's time to be seen. That's the greatest line anybody could ever tell a referee. And it takes a minute to figure out what that means. But once you figure it out, man, what awesome words.
So true. I don't see that much in WWE, to be honest. They seem to be more on the professional. They know what they're doing, the psychology part of it. Some other organizations I noticed, like, that they'll have a face-off and the referee will, for some reason, come into the face-off when you know the production guy wants the face-to-face with nobody in between them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Stuff like that.
Yeah, that was a big thing, too. To this day, like, you know, I had a good little run at NXT for about a year and a half, and I was over all the referees for NXT UK and NXT out of Orlando. And so one of the things I really was like a pet peeve was you see a tag team get a win and you see the referee walk right in the middle of the tag team and raise their hands. So the first thing the ref does is split up the team. and he's go, well, but I'm raising their hands. Yeah, no, you get on one side or the other, but you let the two of them raise their own hands. That way the director, if he wants the ref in the shot, he can get the ref in the shot. But if he just wants the winning team in the shot, he can just get the two wrestlers in the shot. And so, you know, it's just little things. But, hey, look, WWE is, again, the highest level you can go to. And so if you're not on your game as a referee, there's – 6 or 7 referees at NXT right now, and every one of them would love the opportunity to be on that big show, I promise you.
Wow, that's so true. That's so smart psychology-wise, because the shot, it would be almost look like the referee is their manager. If the manager, like Jimmy Hart, was in the middle, right, yes. That makes sense. But like the referee, it almost looks like he's their manager. Why would you want him in the shot? Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
I've seen that, though, in other places. I don't know about WWE. Now that I think about it, I don't know. They probably obviously tell them, or you told them and hopefully got it into their heads. Guys.
I hope so.
Yeah. Is there anything else that kind of annoys you just from a referee standpoint? Because I've seen some, like, referees, they kind of just, in other organizations, not really WWE, but they, like, make themselves a part of the match way too much. Like, even getting into it with the threes, even their outfits, I feel like sometimes it's just too much attention on them.
It is. Look, when I was there, we had a lot of little unwritten rules of, you know, no visible tattoos on the arms. You know, you got to be well groomed. I mean, look, times change. And I know from still being around the business that if you don't roll with the times, you get left behind. And so I'm very much... I had a lot to do with Aja. What's her name? Daphne LeShawn on Raw and SmackDown is Jess, the two female referees. And I had a lot to do with both their careers. And I'm very proud of that because I watch their matches to this day and their business. You know, in the ring, they are business. And that's what they were taught. And so to see them years later get the opportunity to be a part of the big show and not just be a part of it, but to actually contribute is awesome. It is awesome. And I know they're both living a dream, and they're doing a great job at it. So it's very cool. I feel like right now at NXT, there are no female refs getting ready for the next big step. And so I feel like they need a couple of female referees down there, because I think there's 7 refs and they're all male. And so you need females, you do. And they're good. And in the ring, the talent, they respect them. And a ref has to have respect in the match. I don't care, male, female, big, little, I don't care. And so Jess and Daphne LaChaise, they command respect, and they do it in their actions. They don't do it with their mouth, they do it in their actions. And so it's very respectable, and they're both, man, so proud of both of them.
So you're basically, you were the senior official for a while. Is it easier, like, when you're a referee in the business that long? I mean, excuse me, a wrestler in the business that long, to become a referee?
Oh, it was for me. Look, I loved it. I was, when I reffed, I was so relaxed in the ring, and it was because I'd spent 22 years as a wrestler. And as a wrestler, it's basically, look at me, look at me. But as a referee, you're not doing that. So you don't have to try to do that. You just kind of blend and be invisible. And so then you can actually enjoy being part of the match. When you're actually wrestling, you're thinking, what have I got to do next? Oh, he got away from me. I got to close the gap. I mean, there's so many things in your head. And as a referee, you don't have to think about those things. The talent's thinking of those things. And so you just react. And it was just, I was just so much more comfortable. And plus, I'd gotten older. I couldn't take those bumps anymore anyway.
Who would want to? Yeah.
Yeah. Amen.
When you look at it, though, like you said, you got released. You were expecting it? Are you surprised? Or just because of the way the world was at that point, you kind of expected that?
So look, I've been released by a company 3 different times.
Right. That's true. Yeah, that's right.
And, the last one, I did not see coming. We had done NXT TV on a Tuesday night. I went back to the apartment. My brother, Road Dogg, he was down there too working, but he was off that week. And so all of a sudden I get a phone call from him saying, "Hey man, I just got released." And I went, "Whatever, dude, when are you coming down here?" Because we were sharing an apartment in Orlando. We both lived here, but we had an apartment down there too. And he said, "No, I'm serious." And so about a half hour later, I get the phone call, and I went, "Oh wow." And then I find out that they released 15 people that day, 15 behind the scenes. And so I realized they're going through at the time, it was WWE, it wasn't Endeavor. And so I understood that it's business. You know what I mean? Every time I was released, you can't get mad at anybody. It's the business being the business. That's exactly what it is. And so was I heartbroken that I lost a really good gig? Yeah, I was, no doubt. But I had my brother and 13 other people that were also very heartbroken over the same thing. And look, in this business, you either pick up and keep going, or you drown in your tears. But I've got jobs, lost jobs. It's just, my wife and I talked about it not long ago. Next week, we will be married 37 years. And so we talked about the roller coaster of it all, the getting the job and being so happy, and then the fun ride of that job. And then you're released and it's the dip and it's, oh man. And all of a sudden, here we are talking about it 40 years later. And you go, wow, man, I'm so thankful that I had the opportunity to have that ride, because a lot of people never do. And I honestly feel like I've lived the life of 10 men. And I know, many a man would have traded places with me in a heartbeat. And so through all the joy and the tears and everything else, man, here I am, like I said, still 62 and still having fun in the business, not at that super duper high level, but still at a level where I can teach and educate and teach guys and girls how the business works, and share my love of it all. You know what I mean? And I know it sounds like, oh, wow. I'll never forget one time CM Punk said to me, I was talking like this, and CM Punk said, "Wow, man, you're still in the honeymoon phase." And I said, I really am, but it's lasted for 4 decades now. So, you know, hey, man, do what you, like I said, do what you love. You never work a day in your life. And I love this.
And you mentioned Road Dogg, probably maybe the most famous of all the Armstrongs, just because the Attitude Era and everything. I mean, he became so popular. He always makes headlines. And I always think to myself, like, nah, he's crazy. And then I actually listened to like what he said, like the whole thing. I was like, maybe he's right. Like, he says he's a better sports entertainer than this guy or better than that guy. But then I think to myself, because even my friend said it, he goes, name me something when he's talking about the other guy that the other guy does that you remember. I said, can't right now. I'd have to think about it. He said, name something. But he said, name something that the Road Dogg said or did. And I, you know, oh, you didn't know your ass, but I call somebody that little thing with the punch, his clothesline, you remember his, sure, you know, all that stuff. Like, I was like, that's so true. I was like, he is a better sports entertainer because you can literally remember everything he did.
Yeah. He's a trip, man. So he'll, you know, he does his podcast and he says things that I just go, oh my God. Or I'll look at X or Twitter or whatever people call it now. And I'll look at that and I'll see him trending and I go, oh my God, what did he say now? But sometimes he'll just text me and say, hey, don't think anything. I'm probably going to trend in a little while. And I'll know, oh, he's doing it just to fire people up. And he does. But yeah, he was great. I mean, he was given the platform and he ran with it. And so, you know, look, man, you can't, the first time I ever saw him go for that, like the sidewalk slam, whatever that thing is, where he hooks the arm and just start humping the guy from behind, I went, oh my God, what is he doing? And and after the match, of course, talked to him on the phone and go, hey man, I got kids, man. You can't be doing that on TV. And he started laughing and he said, yeah, Vince told me, dear God, what am I going to do? I can't put you on TV anymore. And then he would do it again. And then Vince would go, what are you doing? You told me you wouldn't do that anymore. And he'd go, I can't help it, Vince. I felt it. And he said, Vince would get so hot at me. But look, man, he was given a platform in an era where you could just about do anything. And he pushed it to the limit. He did. And, you know, he was wild back then. It's amazing that how cleaned up he is now and how focused he is and how well he's doing with WWE now. It's just, man, it's amazing. It's a fantastic transformation and I'm so happy to see it. I'm the oldest brother. He's the youngest brother.
Wow. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so what is Steve? How many years younger?
So Steve is, Brad was a year and a month younger than me. Steve is like 2 years and 8 months or 9 months younger than me. And then Ryan Road Dogg is 8 years younger than me.
No wonder you're the smartest of the world. The oldest. The oldest is the wisest.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, it's been fun.
And when you look at Road Dogg, too, it's funny. I have a friend of mine. He hasn't watched wrestling in like 20 years. If I text him, oh, you didn't know, I could get the text back, your ass better call somebody. Like, you still remember this stuff. Like he does do a great job at like certain aspects, even that little hump thing. Like you could just do that, like joking around, like Road Dogg, yeah. Road Dogg. So he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he does. He really does know what he's doing.
So how would you rank the Armstrong brothers as far as all time? Bullet Bob's probably the best, right? As far as just leading you guys, but how about the brothers underneath?
Oh, Brad. Brad first, and you could ask any brother separately away from each other, and I promise you every one of them would say Brad first, without a doubt. And look, toughest of the family, I mean toughest, like street fight, hurt somebody, Steve, without a doubt. In-ring performer, Brian, without a doubt. And me, I'm just happy to have been a part of it. That's just the truth, man. I wasn't the toughest. I wasn't the in-ring guy. I just wanted to wrestle, and I learned how to wrestle and ended up, like I said, what my dad said to me in the back of that car when I was 22 years old, everything he said came to pass in my life. So I got to live that life, man. I really did, and do all the stuff that you just go, wow, I can't believe I was able to do that, man, and able to be a part of some really cool stuff. So, yeah, Brad, number one, without a doubt.
Smooth as silk, that Russian leg sweep, man, everything he did was smooth as silk.
Yeah, he was great, man. He was a great person to learn from. and a great friend. I mean, a better man than a wrestler. You know what I mean? So, which says a lot about him. I'll never forget at his viewing when he passed away. Terry Taylor sat down next to me and said, "Scotty, you know, I don't think I ever heard anybody ever say one bad thing about Brad." And he said, "We're in the wrestling business, man. That's just unheard of." And it is. And I think about that, man. I never heard anybody say anything bad about Brad. He was just a good dude. And man, is he missed. God, I miss him every day.
Man, Lash LaRue says, like, best friend. Dr. Thomas says best friend. Everybody loved him. Just,
yeah.
What a guy.
Yeah, he was loving and giving. And if he had a pen and you needed it, he gave it to you. I mean, it was yours then. That's just how he was, shirt off his back kind of guy, and always that way since childhood, always that way.
Now, you got to wrestle with your brothers a few times, and I always think about Smoky Mountain Wrestling because I love going back and watching that territory, because the last real territory that involved in wrestling, and it's great. Like, Bullet Bob is there. You guys are in and out. The Heavenly Bodies are awesome. I mean, Kane is a young puppet at that point. Al Snow is coming through. But what is your overall thought of that territory and Jim Cornette?
Oh, Jim Cornette, I love him. If you don't know Jim Cornette, he might rub you the wrong way. But I grew up knowing him. And so you're going to know how he feels. And I appreciate that. I'm a grown man. You hurt my feelings, I'm going to move on. And Jimmy, he might hurt somebody's feelings, but that's him. He is, honestly, and I know your listeners probably are not going to believe this, he's a good dude and a loving, caring man. He is. And he had a vision, and he wanted to make my dad the Smoky Mountain commissioner and, bring me in as a wrestler. Then I went to Japan and came back, and he put a mask on me and let me have about a year long run. And all the time that I'm having this run under the mask, he's building my dad up as the commissioner, only to have me at the end of the year unmask and be Bob Armstrong's son. Oh my God. You know what I mean? It was, and he had this storyline. He presented it to me well before any of it started taking place. And he saw it all the way through. Jimmy's business. He's business. And Smoky Mountain was the last, I always said, it was the last real territory. It was. And it was a lot of fun. Man, we had a lot of fun. And the houses weren't huge. The big shows would be at Knoxville Coliseum. Those would be big shows, and we'd draw good crowds. But, like, look, we'd be in Beckley, West Virginia, or Pineville, Arkansas, Kentucky, or Pikeville, Kentucky. I mean, Harlan, Kentucky. It's smaller towns, but look, if you ever went to any of these towns, the only way to get there is through 100 miles of winding mountain road, and all of a sudden you come in, and there's their high school, and we wrestle at their high school, and the high school would fill up, and you go, "Wow, man, this is crazy." But those people back then didn't have a lot to do. So when Smoky Mountain came to town, they'd show up to watch it. But just, man, good crew, really good crew. The Harris twins were there too, man, had some great matches with those guys, and just a lot of fun, man. Tom and Jimmy Del Rey, the Heavenly Bodies, that was Jimmy's team, and me and my brother Steve had a lot of matches with those guys, and just a lot of fun, man. It was a blast. But yeah, a lot of respect for Jim Cornette. Now, I know you probably won't hear that a whole lot, but I love him. I do. He's a good dude.
Hey, so do I. We've done a bunch of stuff together years ago. Still pretty friendly with him, I hope, anyway. I mean, but he's always a great guy to me. We did something. I'm like, "Oh, let's part ways," or whatever. And he goes, "No, I got something for you." He leaves. He comes back, gives me the Midnight Express scrapbook. And I'm like, "Oh my God, thank you so much. It's worth like $500 at least."
Wow.
And he gave me one. Just, he goes, and he signed it. He goes, "Here," he goes, "I want you to have it." I was like, "Oh my God, just so nice." And then like a year later, I got something in the mail, another gift from him. I was like, "Man, he's so nice, but I can't reveal too much because, it would kill his gimmick if somebody finds out he's nice."
Yes.
Sorry, as we dude. hit Oh, yeah, no problem. As we hit the wind out here that we head towards the finish, I'm just curious, though, like favorite matches. You probably hear that all the time. Like, what are your favorite matches? But, man, you've been to so many territories. You wrestled so many good guys. Maybe just some favorite, like, memories and matches that you had just all throughout the time, WCW included.
For sure. Yeah, no, they're, I mean, without a doubt, and it involves Jim Cornette, it was Dory and Terry Funk versus me and my brother Steve. Jim Cornette was in the Funk's corner, and our father was in our corner. I mean, just that alone, my brothers and I all growing up watching Dory and Terry Funk and their father, Dory Funk Sr. And so us growing up, and we identified with those guys because they were brothers and they were wrestling brothers. And so watching those guys growing up, and then it was Knoxville Coliseum, and there we are for Smoky Mountain, and there we are, my brother Steve and I, right before the match, I'm the most nervous, and my dad goes, "Hey boy, you all right?" And I said, "God, I can't believe this is happening. We're going to wrestle Dory and Terry Funk." And my dad smiled real big and said, "They're just brothers, just like y'all are." And I said, "Yeah, Dad, you don't get it, man. I idolized these guys growing up, man, and now we're actually going to wrestle them." And he started laughing and he goes, "Still brothers." He was trying to relax me because, dude, I was fired up. But that is a true, like, you give me your top three career high spots, that's one of them. The other one, standing in the ring, WrestleMania, you know, Triple H, Undertaker. Come on, man. How do you take that out of your top three? You know what I mean? That's just a spot within itself. But one of the spots, like, there's not a lot of spots anymore that I can think of that actually gave me goosebumps. But we were in London O2 Arena. It's the acoustics in that building. Well, the acoustics are so good. That was the arena that Michael Jackson, before he passed away, was going to do the 50 concert dates in a row. And it was in London at the O2 Arena because the acoustics there are unreal. And so it was the Undertaker's very last tour with WWE. His last time he was going on tour. And it was the Last Ride Tour was the name of it. And so it was Taker against Big Show. And I was the referee. And so I go out there and get in the ring. And here comes Big Show's entrance. It's sold out, needless to say, like 22,000 people. They're booing Big Show big time. And I'm just thinking, wow, man, this is a cool moment in my career. I mean, in my life, to be able to be in London, and I'm sold out. And Show gets in the ring, and all of a sudden those lights go out, and Taker, the first dong hits. And, dude, I'm telling you, it was pitch black and deafening because we're in the middle of all those people yelling straight in at us. And all of a sudden, I couldn't even see anything, how dark it was. And all of a sudden, right next to my head, Big Show says, he leans down and goes, "This is awesome." I just looked back up at him and went, "Yes, it. Man, I got goosebumps telling you the story. That's how awesome it was." And then to see, you know, the gongs hit, and they're just so loud. And then here comes Taker and the fire's going off. Oh, man, dude, it was truly something. You know, those three things right there, my top three, without a doubt. And look, I had great matches with every family member I have involved. Great matches. But as far as just me asking me what my career high spots, those three, without a doubt, man. Really proud of all three of those moments.
What's next for you? What else you got going on coming down the pike? I know you're talking about DCW.
Yeah, DCW is over here in Mobile, and look, they have leased this arena for 2 years. They've put some money into it. The grand opening is the 27th of this month, and they're going to do a ribbon cutting, and then they've got the wrestling academy over there, and so I'll be over there training like 2 to 3 days a week, and I've already started, as a matter of fact, and we're just going to try to get this thing up and running. The two gentlemen that own the operation, they love wrestling and they are fully committed to trying to make this work. And I'm right here too, so I want to make it work with them. I mean, I'm an hour away, so I'd be crazy not to take advantage of something that, you know, it was a great business opportunity. And so I really, I hope we can make it work. I mean, we're going to try, that's for sure.
Where can everybody find you, social media and otherwise?
Yeah, so on X, formerly Twitter, is at WWE Armstrong. And then that'd probably be the best place to get me. I have a, Diamond Championship Wrestling, their Facebook, DCW Facebook. They have numbers, emails. They have the whole nine yards. It's all set up through those guys. And so if you would love to train to be a professional wrestler, then I would love to train you. So Diamond Championship Wrestling, or hit me up on X at WWE Armstrong. And I would love to help out the future of the business.
Right. Awesome. Scott, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it. Got to have you back on. You got a wealth of knowledge and so many stories. We got to have you back on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. I appreciate everything, man. Take care.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.